At the front with the French Army, direct from French General Headquarters on the Western Front, we present the second report to Victor Lusanki, Mutual's American Observer with the French Army. Mr. Lusanki, American newspaper writer, has just completed a tour of the Belgian frontier and reports tonight on the things he has observed. Since France is at war, naturally a censorship prevails. We take you now to France.
Good evening, America. I am talking to you from French General Headquarters somewhere in France. Despite the fact that contact between the French and German armies only exists at the present time along the Franco-German frontier, the question much mooted today as to whether the Reich High Command will again resort to the strategy of 1914 by launching a lightning attack at France through neutral territory has caused interest to be focused on the Luxembourg and Belgian frontiers. For this reason, the three-day tour which I have just made of the French defensive positions facing Luxembourg and Belgium was particularly interesting. The Maginot Line is not confined to the Franco-German frontier, but runs along the Luxembourg border as far as Longwy, where France, Belgium, and Luxembourg meet. From Longwy along Belgium to the North Sea, the defensive works are similar to and prolong the Maginot Line, but they are of a more supple type, adapted to the differences in the terrain. Begun following the annexation of Austria, they were built not by contracting companies, but by the troops. Every natural obstacle was utilized to the utmost. It is where the terrain does not provide such obstacles that the fortresses of the Maginot Line type reappear. The beautiful valley of the Meuse is a perfect example of the putting into practice of the principle of economy, both as to men and money, by the adaptation of the defensive works to the peculiarities of the terrain. Studded along the sides of the mountains through which the river winds its way are blockhouses and casemates of reinforced concrete, manned by crews of three or four men and armed with automatic guns. They are so placed as to cover the entire valley by their crossfire. The art of camouflage has reached such a state of perfection that these defense posts are practically imperceptible to the untrained eye. I drove past a blockhouse only 30 feet away without noticing it until the officer accompanying me pointed it out with visible and justified satisfaction. An effective barrier to both enemy tanks and infantry was constructed in the forest by the simple expedient of partially cutting through the trunks of trees about a yard from the ground. The trees were then pulled down without being completely detached from their stumps and linked together with barbed wire. Machine gun nests in concrete emplacements hidden amongst the trees behind the barrier and heavy artillery dissimulated along the ridges of the surrounding mountains cover it with their fire. Anti-tank mines complete the defense. The clearings in the forest are protected by anti-tank ditches or rails and the fire of anti-tank and machine guns placed in small fortifications. In contrast to the Meuse Valley with its natural obstacles, which needed only reinforcing of a comparatively simple character, is the Valley of the Sambre, where the open country called for more vast fortifications. Here the Maginot Line reappears with all its characteristics. Within sight of the Belgian frontier have been constructed large casemates which go deep into the ground and which, like those along the Rhine, are completely self-sufficient. Some of them are built on the emplacements of the forts which were constructed before the war of 1914. Their approaches are cut off by deep anti-tank ditches and rails strongly embedded in the ground which link the fortifications. Machine and anti-tank guns, some in fixed mushroom-like domes and others in revolving and retractable turrets, sweep the entire region with a flanking fire. Long-prepared firing charts enable the gunners to lay down a deadly barrage at any given point at a moment's notice. Even an attack in heavy fog would make little difference, for the guns can be attached to cams, which assure that the firing follows the contour of the terrain as the guns sweep from side to side, so that not one shell will go high or bury itself in the ground prematurely. The only branch of the army which has seen action in northern France is the intricately organized anti-aircraft system which works hand in hand with the British and French air forces. I visited the brain center of this system and had the rare good luck of being present when the approach by way of the North Sea of three enemy planes on a reconnaissance flight was flashed from London. In this vaulted room below ground, where the work is done of receiving the reports from the lookout and listening posts which dot the entire region, the analyzing of them, and the sending out warnings to the various points, activity suddenly became intense. The course of the enemy planes was traced in red chalk on a huge blackboard map, while on other charts were posted information as to their height and speed. In a metallic voice, the officers receiving the reports from the orderlies, who kept rushing in and out, groaned, X announces enemy planes at 12,000 feet, flying at 120 miles an hour, direction southeast. British and French Air Force officers transmitted the information to their chasing squadrons. With the reports continuing to file in at intervals of a few seconds, the course of the enemy planes was traced on the blackboard as they passed over the coast and skirted the Belgian frontier. Orders were sent out to the anti-aircraft batteries to prepare for action and to the air raid centers to sound the sirens so that the civil population of the threatened areas would take shelter. A few minutes later, reports began to arrive of the passage of the chasing planes sent out to intercept the raiders. Their course was marked on the blackboard in yellow chalk. Suddenly, trace of the enemy planes was lost. While the yellow line showing the progress of the defense planes continued to grow, the red line remained unchanged. After an interval which seemed like ages, but in reality was only a few minutes, reports of the enemy machines again began to file in. But it was a new line which was being traced and which indicated that they were heading back to the coast. The officer beside me explained that they had been lost because they had swerved into Belgium and that their course was again picked up when they had cut back into France to take photographs despite the clouds by means of the infrared process. Before the announcement that the alarm, which had lasted about an hour since the first warning was over, the report came in that a coastal anti-aircraft battery had fired on the enemy planes as they headed out to sea. The all-clear signal was then sent out. The possibility that the heavy forces of troops stationed along the Belgian frontier, in addition to the permanent crews, as they are called, which man the fortifications, may remain inactive for a long period, except for the usual work of laying out barbed wire entanglements and digging trenches, raises the delicate question of maintaining their present high morale. The matter is already being given attention, and it was interesting to see the efforts which being made to organize recreation centers and comfortable living quarters. In one small town, the men had converted a former factory into a theater, sitting 1,500 spectators. The stage was the demountable platform of the town's public bandstand, while a backdrop was composed of small trees. The programs are organized with the help of talent recruited amongst the men themselves, and the money raised through small admission fees had already permitted giving financial aid to each of the 200 members of the regiment who had become fathers since the beginning of the war. Particular attention is given to the quality of the food, and on this score I heard no complaints. Nevertheless, the temptation to add a rabbit, for instance, is sometimes too great to be resisted, even though it is reported that wild game cannot be touched. I learned this while with a colonel who was accompanying me on a visit to a point in a forest where six men were stationed. When he raised the lid of a pot simmering on the stove to show what they were having for dinner, the unmistakable odor of well-cooked rabbit permeated the air. Without a moment's hesitation, he replaced the lid and said, "You see, they are having beef." As he walked away, the colonel explained with a smile to me that if a rabbit scampering past the camp was so foolish as to jump right into a pot on the stove, the men really could not be blamed. Thank you and good night.
Direct from French General Headquarters on the Western Front, we have presented a report by Victor Lusanki, Mutual's observer with the French Army, who has just completed a tour of the Belgian frontier.